Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Rates and Lanes with Rico Mohammed. This is the show where we improve your knowledge of the freight market, improve your bottom line, and improve the transportation industry as a whole. We're talking Rates and Lanes. Let's move on down the audio road.
Good evening, everyone. This is Rico Mohammed coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia. Apologize for not being able to get on with you guys last week. Hopefully, I tried to post a little bit of information. Hopefully, things didn't miss me too much. We want to try to make that as less of an occurrence as possible. Tonight, we will be joined by, I call him our resident mentor. Chuck Snow will be joining us tonight. So if you have any questions for Chuck a little bit later on, he'll be dropping in with us. If you have any questions that you would like to ask or whatever, you can go ahead and press number one. We're going to try to get our call screener in place to get some of those questions, get you guys screened in and get you in position to ask your questions. Tonight, I'm going to start off the show a little bit differently than what we normally do. We're going to go and look at some information that I think is really critical to a lot of us guys that have our own authority, and we may be out here running some spot market freight. And with spot market freight, you know, you're dealing with brokers, and you have the risk of running into potentially bad brokers or whatever. And so I'm going to start off tonight with some credit information about a couple of brokers that have kind of made the news, that are on the radar for having their either their bonds revoked or they are showing really, really high credit risk. So if you got a pen and paper, now would be a good time to maybe take some of these names down of some of these different brokerage companies, and also even trucking companies and shippers are also on this list. I don't think that I have a way to create a link to try to get you a copy of this list, so I'm just going to try to read off a few of them that's critical that stuff happened over the last month or two. And starting out, I guess, on the list of shame is a company called Tenet Truck Lines. MC number 146754. They have over $37,000 in non-payment complaints reported to this industry's website. GRS Brokerage LLC, GRS Logistics Inc., MC number 761962, over $14,000 in non-payment complaints. Professional Shipping LLC, MC number 865904. FMCSA shows trust fund canceled, over $8,000 in non-payment high risk. MC number, the next one is JAD Freight Services, MC number 527673. Over 33,000 in non-payment complaints. Alliance Export Freight LLC. Now, as part of your load board, if you have a load board, as part of your load board, some of this information should be showing up by either the company name or MC. They're definitely up under the MC number. They may have resolved their issues, but every time that you get ready to part of your negotiating, when someone very first gives you a call and you calling someone and you're interested in doing a load that they may have, this should be part of your vetting process. You should begin to look at them pulling up their MC number, just like they ask you when you call in, well, what's your MC number or whatever. They're doing a process of looking into you and starting to vet you. And you have to do, as a business owner, you have to start beginning to do the same thing. This is and if you guys are happen to be using someone else that is doing your dispatching for you or something like that, I know that there are a couple of dispatching services that are out there. You know my stance on that one. But if you happen to, you want to make sure that they are doing this process correctly so that you are not the one ultimately left holding the bag with someone that is not, you cannot get your money from. I can't stress how critically important that part of the aspect is, that you make sure that you're doing this vetting, that you're looking up these brokers and different companies by their MC numbers, making sure that their trust fund is still intact and that it's still valid, that they haven't been canceled by the FMCSA. Because a lot of these guys, as you can see with this last company that I read off, and actually it was two of them, over $30,000 of non-payment complaints. It doesn't take a long time for that to rack up over a period of time. So you want to make sure that you're not going to be one of the people that gets bit and looking for payment from a company that doesn't have the ability or is not paying or outright flat out stealing money off of the sweat of your brow. You already are at a disadvantage to a degree anyway, so you want to make sure that you're dealing with good, reputable, and solid companies. So I'm going to start back over with this last one I was reading off. Jade Freight Services, MC number 527673, over $33,000 in non-payment complaints. Alliance Export Freight LLC, MC number 833559, FMCA Shoals Trust Fund Council, over $14,000 in non-payment complaints. Next one is Freight Trans LLC. And these are, ladies and gentlemen, these are reports that have happened within the last 2 months. I'm going back as far as the last 2 months. I wasn't going back too far. But I know that sometimes when you're billing and you may be looking at your accounts receivable, and you may see somebody maybe getting out there in that 30 to 45-day range. I want to make sure that none of these guys if you happen to be listening in, that none of these people make on your list. This next one that I'm getting ready to talk about has a large one. They have exceeded their bond limit. Wings of Eagles Logistics, LLC, MC number 667, FMCSA Shoals Trust Fund Council, over $121,000 in non-payment complaints. So this is some of the information that I'm talking about with you guys, and this is, when you're signing to do business with most brokers, they have clauses in their contracts that you waive your right of remedy to be able to recourse back to the shipper. Now, this will be a great question. I have to make this a note to myself when we have Seton on. When these situations happen, is there a way to actually supersede that in some of these contracts? But these are some of the situations that you have to deal with, that you make sure that you're doing a complete vetting process before you take and book some of these loads from some of these fly-by-night. Well, I'm not even going to call them fly-by-night. People most times, I'm going to err on the side of most people have the best intentions, not sure exactly what happened with some of these situations. I'm just reporting what is being shown on their record as of right now. And that's going to wrap it up for the report for the previous 2 months. I'm going to see if there's a way that I can either create a link or maybe even do a screenshot. I want to make sure I get permission to share this information on a public forum before I do it, as far as the printed information. But if you have the MC numbers, you have the names of the freight companies, by all means, make sure that you're checking this against, and your load board should have a service where you can do credit checks, or if you're using a factoring company, they should be able to do credit checks for you for free as part of your service if you're using a factoring company. So make sure that you are doing that bit of the process before you just accept the load, sign contracts, sign rate confirmations, and go off running, and you're doing work for free at the end of the day. Just want to provide that word of caution. And now we're going to jump back into our regularly scheduled program, and we're going to talk about this week's DAT Trend Lines report for February the 28th through March 5th. National spot market rates edged up in the first week of March following a slow February. Load postings rose 12%, which contributed to higher demand for van, reefers, and flatbeds all across the board. This week, we're going to take a look right now at the U.S. van demand and capacity report. Van load postings increased 12% last week, and truck postings decreased 2%, boasting the load-to-truck ratio from 1.4 up to 1.6 loads per truck. The national average van rate increased 2 cents from the previous week. Time last month, van load postings had fallen 17% in February. When compared to January, truck postings increased 13%, which dropped the load-to-truck ratio from 1.9 down to 1.4. those per truck compared to February of 2015. The ratio was down by 47%. So let's look at the U.S. van rates for the week of February the 28th through March 5th. And the national average van rates rose 2 cents up to $1.56 per mile on average. Outbound rates rose in the Los Angeles markets but fell in the Atlanta markets. The national diesel price was $2.02 per gallon. That's up 3 cents from last week. Taking a quick look around the country, in the northeastern portion of the United States, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania reports an average rate for dry vans coming in at $1.69 per mile. Moving down into the southeastern portion of the United States, Atlanta, Georgia checks in showing an average rate for dry vans at $1.55 per mile. Setting the high water mark, actually tying the high water mark, the midwestern portion of the United States, Chicago, Illinois, shows an average rate for dry vans at $1.77 per mile. Coming in the south central portion of the United States, we have Dallas, Texas showing $1.47 per mile on average for dry vans. Coming out of the City of Angels, the co-leader in the Bourne House, showing an average rate for dry vans at $1.77 per mile. Taking a look, moving on over into the flatbed segment of the report for this week of February 28th through March 5th, flatbed load volume rose 13%, capacity declined by 4% for an 18% increase in the load-to-truck ratio. The national average flatbed rate rose 3 cents last week up to $1.83 per mile. Looking back at this time last month, flatbed load postings rose 33% in February compared to the previous month. Capacity also increased 10%. As a result, the load-to-truck ratio for the month rose 21% from 8.6 up to 10.4 loads per truck compared to February of 2015. Ratio was down by 11%. So we're going into good times and good seasons for oversized flatbeds and step decks. You know, this is springtime. Stuff is freight starting to move. Construction's getting underway. So we're going to start to see a good bit of increase with the flatbed over the next coming weeks. Let's look and see how the rates were performing for flatbeds. On the spot market this week, flatbed spot market rates rose 3 cents last week to a national average of $1.83, added 18% and 14.8 loads per truck nationally as a national average. The rates this week coming out of Harrisburg in the northeastern portion of the United States, setting the high water mark, $2.89 per mile, coming out of the northeastern portion of the United States. Moving down into the southeastern portion of the United States, Atlanta, Georgia checks in showing an average rate for flatbeds at $2.05 per mile. Moving up into the midwestern portion of the United States, Rock Island checks in showing an average rate of $2.37 per mile for flatbeds. Moving down into the south central portion of the United States, Houston, Texas checks in shows an average of $1.76 per mile for flatbeds. And out west, coming in last this time around, Phoenix, Arizona is checking in showing an average rate of flatbeds moving at $1.56 per mile. And let's see here, going jumping over into the U.S. reefer demand and capacity report. For the week of the 28th, February 28th through March 5th, reefer loads postings were up 10%, and truck postings fell 2% last week. As a result, the load-to-truck ratio increased 12% from 2.8 up to 3.1 loads per truck. The national average reefer rate increased 1 cent up to $1.80 per mile on the spot market. This time last month, reefer load postings declined 27% in February compared to the previous month, and truck postings rose 12% As a result, the load-to-truck ratio fell 35% from 4.5 down to 3 loads per truck. Compared to the demand of February 2015, the ratio was down 62%. Taking a look at the rates to see how rates performed over the week of the 28th through March 5th. Reefer spot market rates rose 1 cent last week up to $1.80 per mile due to the 1 cent increase in the average fuel surcharge. Compared to the previous week, the load-to-truck ratio increased 12%. Taking a look around the country at rates in different segments of the country, northeastern portion of the United States, Elizabeth, New Jersey checks in showing rates of reefers moving at $1.55 per mile on average. Down into Florida, Lakeland, Florida, coming out of the southeastern portion of the United States, we have reefer rates reporting in at $1.29 per mile on average. Jumping up into the Midwest, once again, Green Bay, Wisconsin leads the charge, $2.51 on average coming out of Green Bay, Wisconsin in the Midwestern portion of the United States. Jumping down into the Rio Grande, and we're starting to see a good bit of movement, so this number kind of surprised me that it's not a little bit higher, but coming out of the Rio Grande, McAllen, Texas, showing average rate for reefers at $1.80 per mile. And also, this number kind of surprised me as well, coming out of the West Coast, average rate coming out of Fresno, California, showing $1.78 per mile. The reason that those numbers kind of surprised me, I guess the next report that we're going to jump into, the USDA report, will talk about that a little bit. But we're starting to see some movements in a lot of the traditional heavy reefer markets. Maybe because, okay, this kind of explains it. The USDA report is showing that all of those markets are either showing a slight surplus or showing an outright surplus of trucks. So that might be why the rates are still depressed in those areas. We don't have any markets that are showing any shortages or slight shortages. So once again, I will be putting links to both of these reports. The DAT Trendline report should already be up and on board on the up on our website and on the Rates and Lanes Facebook page. And without any further ado, I see we got a couple people got their hands up and got some questions. But before I jump into anything else, I want to bring on, I call him our resident mentor, Mr. Chuck Snow. Let's get Chuck up and on board with us. Chuck, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How you doing, Rico?
Oh, man, I cannot complain. How was your holiday?
It was fantastic. I spent 10 beautiful days in your country. And I drove from, don't want to bore you guys, but I drove from Toronto to Cleveland to Nashville to New Orleans, kind of a musical tour. And you got a great country. Phenomenal trip.
Cool. I know what you had for you down in store down there in New Orleans. Now, that's getting a little jazz in your system there, Chuck.
Oh, yeah. Phenomenal music. Really a great trip. But it's always good to be back.
Cool. So what's new? What's going on with you guys up at Traffics?
Well, you know what? We're busy. The things are picking up. I was sorry to hear about at the start of the show when I called in about some of the brokers that are having a hard time. I don't think anybody likes to see that because somebody's always getting hurt. If I can give some advice to our listeners out there, I'm not a big proponent of factoring. You know, if you don't have to, for God's sakes, don't do it. It's a very expensive way of financing. However, one of the things you can do is if you can make an arrangement with a factoring company to factor some of your receivables, not all of them, the ones that you want to factor, even if it's a higher rate on a non-recourse basis. That means that you'll pay a higher rate, but hell or high water, if the broker or the customer doesn't pay, it's no skin off of your back. And you were saying about the load boards, checking the credit on those load boards. I have found that's quite often not accurate. I've seen people, as a matter of fact, I've seen bankrupt companies that were on there that had phenomenal credit ratings.
Wow. Good to know, Chuck. I appreciate you. I appreciate you dropping that jewel on us. That's good to know.
Yeah, so don't
that's
go
one
by...
of the, that's a major selling feature that practically every low board, their ability and how strong they are with their credit ratings. They and I'm kind of, you know, it kind of makes your antennas go up a little bit because you're wondering, you know, kind of like my stance on some of the things with the with TIA and some of the other different things. You know, they never have a. I've never seen a broker being reported for bad activities that's a TIA member. But you mean to tell me that I'm not disillusioned and thinking that everybody's squeaky clean? I know there's some bad apples out there. So,
yeah, there is.
You know,
you're right. There are bad apples there, and I think that about 99% of them are real good. And
right. Even
the real good ones will get into trouble sometime. And what will happen to them, and anybody who's been in business a long time can have this happen where all of a sudden you're going along well with a client and one of their customers goes under and they take that broker out automatically because that broker is doing, you know, $300,000 or $400,000 a month in business, and he finds out he's lost $400,000, not every small broker can handle a $400,000 storm. And that bond's only
right,
50 or 75 for $100,000.
Yeah, and that's the risk of having too many eggs in one basket.
Yes, sir, but
that's
that happens
major,
in business.
That's...
You're right. Rico, our biggest worry at our place, and we watch our receivables like a hawk, and there are very few in our receivables on our receivables list that are over 45 days. And the odd one will climb up a little bit higher on certain ones because you get with these Fortune 500 companies and they'll miss a payment here or miss a payment there or short pay something for no reason, things like that, especially when you're doing hundreds of thousands of dollars a year business with them. But our biggest worry is the one that is within his terms, and he's the guy that goes under. You know, there was a company up here in Canada that was the main carrier for Target during their ill attempt to take over the Canadian market. And they got hit for $800,000. And it was all... Yes. And that $800,000 was all within that 30-day period. Target paid all their bills within 30 days. And that poor carrier, not only did he lose $800,000, but he built a very expensive terminal worth about $25 million in order to cover the business he was about to get from Target. So it was like a double whammy. So you can't be too careful.
That's unfortunate. That's sad and unfortunate.
That's right.
Chuck, we got a few people that's got their hand raised. You ready to jump into some calls?
Yeah, let's get right into it, Rico.
Let's see here. We got a caller from the 414 that was the first up that doesn't say it has a response. The screen tried to come to you. We're going to try you real quickly, 414. See if we can get a response. You're live and on air with Rico and Chuck. How can we help? Yeah, they're not responding. Looks like we're going to put them back on hold. We're going to go to a line that looks like we do have somebody on there. Calling from the 706. My screen didn't put your number up. They said that you wanted me to repeat some numbers for you.
Yes, the MC numbers. Thank you for taking my call, Rico. I just pulled over. I couldn't write them down quick enough on them brokers.
Okay, not a problem. The good thing about this show is it is recorded. You can go back and listen to it, but there's I'll read back off a few of them real quickly. There's Tenant Truck Lines, Inc., MC number 146754, $37,000 in non-payment. This was reported on 3-8-2016. The next one is GRS Brokerage LLC, MC number 761962. This report was generated on 3-2-2016, GRS Brokerage LLC. They have over $14,000 in non-payment. Professional Shipping LLC. This report was generated on 2/29/2016. MC number 865904. FMCSA shows trust fund is canceled. Over $8,000 in non-payments. Next report was generated on 2/22/2016. JAD Freight Services. MC number 527673. Over $33,000 in non-payment complaints. And the couple of big ones, that one that I read off a little earlier, the big one here, over $121,000, the report was generated on 2/9/2016. That was Wings of Eagles Logistics LLC. MC number was 584667, $121,000 in non-payment. That's a big one. And so I'm going to try to see if there's a way that I can create a link and try and put this up on the Facebook page as well, if I can get permission from the company to do so. I might just be able to try to take a screenshot and put that up for you guys. But like I said, you should be checking against them. And also, one of the features on a couple of low boards have direct links to FMCSA. And Chuck was saying that the credit information isn't all that accurate. And hopefully FMCSA has their act together a little bit better than maybe some of the services here as far as this information is concerned, and keeping it updated and valid. So just like a broker, when you call in to a broker, like I was saying, they always, you know, one of their standard operating procedures is to ask you for your MC number. You also need to make sure that if they're calling you that you get their MC number. So that while you're on the phone and negotiating, this is part of the stuff that you go through and part of your negotiating as well to see are they credit worthy. And if they're not, you know, you may want to negotiate, hey, I may be willing to do the load, but, you know, you need to send a half of the com check now and half on delivery. So, you know, everything is up for negotiation at that point in time, but you want to make sure that you are doing whatever you need to do to cover your backside. Anything you want to add on that, Chuck?
Well, I want to warn everybody about an old scam that it's been going around for about 40 years that I know of, and it resurrects itself every so often. And the scam is a load broker gets a load of paper, let's say, going from Jersey to Chicago for, let's say, $1,500, and offers it to you for $2,400. Now, there's not anyone out there that's listening that's not going to jump at a $2,400 load from Jersey to Chicago. He has no intentions of paying you. And that's
What's usually the old thing, if it's too good to be true?
That's right. And that's usually what these scam artists, if they're real scam artists, or if they're just, they know they're going out and they know that they're going to be taking you for money, that's the last hurrah. Now, it is illegal, but, you know, in the United States, they have a hard time catching murderers, kidnappers, and terrorists. And once in a while, they'll catch one of these characters or two of them, and they'll put them in jail. But usually by the time this deed is done, these guys are back on the other side of the world living, you know, living on some island. So you just have to watch it. Number one, if it's too good to be true, it usually is. The other thing, guys, there's so many good brokers that are members of TIA. Why the hell don't you try to stick with them? If they're not, there's usually a reason. And, you know, and make sure if they are members that they're in good standing.
What I didn't have time to do before show prep and probably would be a good idea. I'm really interested and intrigued. I'm going to go back and do it. I want to see how many of these guys were actually members of TIA or if any of them were members of TIA. I'd really be interested to see that.
I'll be honest. We're members. I've never once seen a bulletin come across saying, watch out for this guy. But I would think that it's pretty, they just don't let anybody in, and I think that it's a it's one of the better organizations I've seen, and they do an awful lot for the industry, and I think that they are there to protect the industry as a whole and make it a better industry. So I would presume that they're pretty strict on that. But yeah, that's food for thought, Rico. Check and see if anybody is on there.
Yeah, I'm probably have to report that next week or whatever, and we'll probably try and make that a regular segment of the show to try to keep people aware of these companies and look into that as well. Let's go and jump. Let's see here. We got Christopher that has a question for us. Christopher, you up and on board with Rico and Chuck. How can we help?
Rico, listen, man. I'm just happy what you guys are doing, man, because, listen, somebody needs to call out these guys, man. You know, I'm so saddened by what is going on because a lot of these cooks are on there ripping off drivers and getting away with it. So I'm glad what you guys are doing. But I just want, I heard you giving out some information earlier, Rico, and you were saying that the rates have been up and all that. But right now I'm in New Jersey. I've been here from yesterday. And let me tell you what I'm seeing on truckstop.com. Dollar mile. Less than dollar a mile. You can't even negotiate. When you call the broker and try to get even $100 more, oh, we can't do that, man. I have a lot of people calling. So I don't know how we're going to deal with this. Because I'm telling you, I don't know which driver out there can run his truck and run a business on for dollar a mile or less than dollar a mile. I don't know, man.
But can
I
answer?
I'm thinking of packing this up.
I understand you,
yes.
Christopher. I totally understand your frustration, but unfortunately, the way the world works today, and I did not invent this, I was no part of the invention of this new world that we all live in. It's a live market. Trucks have become a commodity. They've commoditized trucks, and because of that, it's all supply and demand. If you notice at the beginning of the show, when Rico's giving the ratios of trucks and loads, that's what everything depends on. And the information that Rico was talking about, first of all, it is a week old. That's from last week.
Right.
This week, and what happens, Christopher, is people hear there's great money coming out of Jersey. Everybody runs to Jersey, and guess what? Everybody goes there thinking that there's good freight. It's like everybody runs to a pond or to a river because they hear there's fish and get a couple hundred guys, and the pond is fished out in no time. And that's what happens in our industry. And that's why I really stress with anybody listening that wants to take this thing a step higher, don't be running wild. If somebody's willing to give you $3 a mile to go to Jersey, it's because the freight coming back is a dollar a mile. Nobody's being nice to you. You know, in the heat of the summer, you can get $2 or sometimes $3 a mile going into Miami, depending on where you're coming from. When you're in Miami, you'd be lucky to get 50 cents a mile. So your key to success really is to run your business with a particular lane. Find out where you can go, where you can make money steadily. You can't complain one week because the rates are lousy out of New Jersey, but meanwhile you got $3 a mile going in there. So
and right now, real time information that I'm going to chime in real quick. I'm gonna let you finish up, Chuck. But right now, the real time information that I'm showing coming out of Jersey right now, and which is part of the reason why you're struggling is, it's a one-to-one ratio. There's literally less than one load for every truck that's there. So basically, you have to understand the nature of that particular portion of the market. So you have to make sure, this is one of those old trucker sayings where they say you need to take your backhaul with you. You need to make sure that when you go to a market like that, and I understand, which I and trust me, I feel your frustration. I understand where you're coming from with the whole aspect that there seems to be, the market is really tight all over on the spot market right now. And there's very little negotiation taking place because you have uneducated people that really don't know what they're doing, and you have some people that may have good contracts, and they can afford to take that cheap stuff coming out of certain areas, and that's keeping some of the rates depressed as well. You know, a lot of it is, you just have to understand that right now you need to get the hell out of that market and reposition yourself to a better portion of the United States. What area of the United States are you domiciled out of, Christopher?
Rika, but the thing I'm noticing, man, is that it's not just in New Jersey. Wherever part I tried to put the truck and I checked before for the rates, it seemed like the same all over. And I talked to my buddies and said, man, what's going on with the West Coast? I hear you giving a quote for the West Coast that you're surprised about. I'm surprised also, especially coming down out of McAllen. Last year, this time, the year before, McAllen was booming. I mean, everywhere you go, I mean, all over the states. I don't see nobody getting $2 a mile unless you know the broker real well or something going on that I don't know about. But I try to make myself pretty knowledgeable about the business and talk to other guys who have been in the business for over 10, 20 years. And everybody's crying, man.
First of all,
well, one of the things that you got to keep in mind, Chris.
But don't worry about last year.
One of the biggest things that you might have to do, Christopher, just what I took you from my brain to your lips, Chuck. That's one of the things that I was getting ready to say, Christopher. You have to, and I had to come to this realization because I recently lost the contract myself, and I've been doing a little bit more spot market work. And one of the things that I was looking at, I was so insulated by my contract that I really wasn't feeling the pinch of some of the stuff dealings on the spot market. And I had to go back and look at my cost per mile numbers, and I'm like, man, you know, I'm used to, I could just about on certain lanes, I could tell you off the top of my head what that lane should be paying. But those were old numbers. I'm going based on back when fuel was $4 a gallon. Well, fuel now is averaging right around $2, you know, so you have to equate for that. So, like, right now, my cost per mile on my fuel side, my cost per mile for fuel is 23 cents. Wow. My fuel cost per mile used to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 40-some-odd cents, so it was almost double what it is now. So you have to take that into account. And I understand it's hard to – trucking is one of those industries, and trust me, I feel all of your frustration because the income that is in trucking has kind of been so stale over the course of the years. I mean, you hear the old-timers back in the 70s that were making some close to the same rates that we're pulling right now to this very day. But, you know, it's a nature of, like Chuck was saying, we are a commoditized industry, and we have to be nimble, quick, and agile to adjust to whatever's going on in the market. And one of the things that we have to be up on and have our pulse on top of our numbers, knowing what our actual operating cost is. So disillusioned by previous numbers from last year, and man, I used to get this, I used to get that, but the market is ever changing, and we have to constantly be evolving and changing with the market, or we're going to get left behind. Now, that's not to say that, you know what I'm saying, that you should be out here taking anything, any and everything, the cheapest freight that's going on. But right now in the market that you're in, just speaking specifically about New Jersey, where you are right now, you need to get the hell out of there and get to a better, you know, get, maybe try and bounce over and see if you can get over to the Midwest or whatever, to one of those markets that maybe bring you back down into the southeastern portion of the United States. That may put you in a little bit better position to be able to get a little bit more revenue and better income coming in. You know, just thinking out loud, that might be something that you might want to try to do, see if you can position yourself to get, if you got a couple of days, if you can bounce over to the Midwest and see if you can get a load coming to the Southeast, and that gives you a couple of more days if you're working that spot market to kind of be gauging the market that you're going into, but making sure that you're negotiating hard coming out of that Midwestern portion of the United States, because that seems to be right now where the best rates are coming out of on the spot market.
I hear what you're saying, Rico, but it's hard to even negotiate, man, because guess what? You have some guys, man, they will take the load for anything and run, man.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. You have to get to an area. You got to get to a better truck load to truck ratio in order to be able to negotiate.
Yes, truck. What are you saying now? Yes,
where
truck.
Are you domiciled out of?
Say again?
Where do you live?
I live in Georgia. Atlanta, Georgia.
Live in Georgia. Okay. I got some advice, okay?
Yes, sir.
This will help you be successful. First of all, go and get a load going towards Georgia. Even if it's 95 cents a mile.
Yes, I'm heading to Macon right now. I'm loading to go to Macon. Yeah, got
Good.
A load to go to Macon.
Good. Okay, that's your start. Now, you need to make a decision. If you're going to go back to Jersey, get enough money knowing that you're
going
to get 95 cents a mile, okay? But
right.
What might happen, this is how fickle this industry is, by next week, everybody listening to this, finding out about the one-to-one ratio, everybody may say, I'm not going near Jersey. And there may be a ton of loads that pay a lot better. That's how this
right.
market works.
Right.
But you may be better right. off to find freight from, you know, Jersey going towards Arkansas, or I'm sorry, Georgia going towards Arkansas. That may
right.
be a better lane. I don't know. Jersey
just,
has not
hard.
Been a great lane in years.
Yeah, it's just hard to find loads going
that
side.
What type of equipment? What type of equipment are you running?
I got a reefer.
Okay, you're running reefer. Okay, yeah. So
yes,
definitely,
sir.
what you want to do because you right here in my backyard. Coming out of Atlanta, you want to stay out of that northeastern portion of the United States. You want to try to run mainly if you can back and forth between Atlanta, and you don't want to go. I call it past the mid-Atlantic. You don't want to, when you're going up that eastern, you don't want to go past Maryland, really. If you're going to run up the eastern portion of the United States, you really don't want to go past Maryland. You stick back and forth in that area right there. You should do halfway decent with the rates. Pretty good load-to-truck ratios out of those areas as well. And running back and forth right now between, like, areas like Atlanta, North Carolina, Kentucky, Indiana, those areas are pretty decent right now. You can do pretty decent with rates, especially with a reefer. And you can be sufficient. Even right now, it's tough coming out of Georgia right now. But some of the stuff in Georgia is getting ready to start to pick up as well. Some of the produce and stuff, peaches are getting ready to come in the season. So, you know, it's a couple things that the outlook is not all doom and gloom. But, you know, it's one of those situations where we definitely have to be tightening our belt, that we're looking at our numbers, and that we're definitely taking advantage of putting ourselves in good. If you're running spot market, we're putting ourselves in good places where the load to truck ratio is in our favor. You know, you say you run Truck Stop. Truck Stop has a feature called Pentac. I think it is. It's Pentac, where it gives you the amount of loads coming into a particular state and the amount of loads coming in. So it's kind of it's a little bit different than what DAT's product is. DAT has a more direct load to truck ratio, but it's still you basically have to do the math, and it's basically the same thing. Gives you close to the same information. So definitely you want to be looking at those different features on your load board and understanding before you go to an area what you're getting yourself into.
All right, Rico, I'll call you back some other day when you're on, man. I have another question for you. I'll just get off now. Thank you, truck. And
thank you.
You know, let some other guys get their question in.
All right, appreciate you there, Christopher. We appreciate the phone call. And let's see here, we got Carlos that has a question as well. Let's go to Carlos. Carlos,
hey,
you're live. You're on board with Rico and Chuck.
How you doing, y'all?
Good, sir. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. My question is. I'm looking into trying to purchase some equipment, and the customer that I was talking to, he referred me to a guy who was doing power only for moving trailers. So I Googled their name, and I seen what was called a Dun & Bradstreet number. So my question is, what is a Dun & Bradstreet number, and how does it help you in your business?
It's a DUNS number. Means that the number, they're registered with Dun & Bradstreet, who is probably one of the oldest credit agencies in the United States. But really, you should be able to go to them and get accurate information. Now, I know that the information that they report on the Canadian version of DAT, which is called LoadLink, is not accurate. But how you can get accurate information from Dun & Bradstreet is you can subscribe as a company subscription, and you basically buy you buy their services. So they'll give you, for $300, they'll give you 50 credit checks. And those credit checks have value. They're, you know, those
okay.
you pay for. Remember, there's value when you pay for things.
Right. Right.
So that's
right.
really what
right.
a DUNS number is. It's that number that is assigned to a company that's registered with Dun & Bradstreet.
Now, does that help you if, as you, when you, once you register, does that in return help you as far as maybe getting customers or, you know, moving freight or anything like that? Purchasing
you know
equipment
what? I don't
or things
know if
of that
it's gonna,
nature.
You know, Carlos, I don't know if it's going to help you in obtaining customers necessarily. It's certainly going to give you credibility. When you go into a customer and you give them all of your information and you have a DUNS number, they may go, oh, this guy's good. You know what? He's got that too. The one thing it does give you is when you're, God forbid, when you need a repair and you need to get it on credit or you need to get credit up the road, you're helping to build yourself a good credit report. As long as
okay.
you keep your, you know, credit is a privilege and you need to
oh,
keep
yeah.
it intact. So,
okay.
You know, with that in mind, Carlos, if you get a DUNS number and you treat it with respect, you can do very well. And that means that, you know, you run your business properly. And that means that you don't have to go to the expense of factoring companies and all the rest of it.
Right.
And
right.
you're going to make more money. You know, many, many years ago, I'm talking over 30 years ago, I had a very good friend of mine that had a truck line of about 17 trucks. And the man made, this is an interesting story, but I'll tell you how good things were in the late 70s and into the 80s. He had 17 trucks. He would write one off a year. He had no
wow.
He had no collision insurance whatsoever. He was self-insured. Instead of buying collision insurance, he bought an extra truck because his averages were one a year. He got, in those days, he was probably doing $2 or $3 million a year in business. And
oh, wow.
He used to get audited statements that cost him back in those days about $25,000 a year. And I said to him one day, I said, Mike, why do you bother getting audited statements? He said, because this way I get better interest rates. And I also, everybody wants to lend me money. And from that, he was able to buy a piece of property worth $250,000. That he eventually sold for, if I'm not mistaken, about $35 million. So
ooh.
If everybody out there is listening, that's the value and the power of having great credit.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Man, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And probably one of the things that I was going to add, every, you know, with the DUNS number, that's good to have. But definitely as a motor carrier, too, one of the things that might be more beneficial to help you out with some instances is the National Motor Freight Traffic Association, your SCAT number, the SCAC number.
You need that, yes.
Sign up with those guys. Just to put that out there as well. Make sure it's only, I think it's maybe an annual $60 to join and get your SCAT number and to keep it. I think it may be $60 a year. Your DUNS number is free to get. It's free to get a DUNS number to apply the standard way, but they offer some services at Dun & Bradstreet where you can kind of get it the same day. It's not necessary if you don't want to. If you got more time than money, you can just go ahead and get the free one. But they definitely, DNB.com, Dun & Bradstreet.com, DNB.com, you can go there and they have a litany of information available for you right there as well.
Cool. Well, thank you. I'll sit back and listen and enjoy the show.
Thanks, Carlos.
We appreciate the call, Carlos. And what I'll do is I'll get up and put the link up to Dun & Bradstreet up on the Facebook page. Now, Chuck, that frustration of Christopher's call, that's something that's been really, really, really been pertinent going around with a lot of people that everybody's talking about. And I know that you had guys have the oldest brokers in Canada. So tell us, Chuck, why are your brokers not negotiating with these lows no more?
I'll tell you, Rico. My head hurts right now because I wear two hats and I have to change them so often. And, you know, from the broker end, I cannot, when I'm looking after my customer, and remember, an awful lot of my customers today are playing the spot market themselves. More and more of them are getting us to bid on each load. So if I want to go and I want to pay Christopher $1.11 a mile instead of a dollar, I'm not going to get the load, neither is he. So that's the pressure that the brokers are under. And as a carrier, I certainly feel Christopher's pain because half the day I'm helping my guys make those calls when they have trucks stuck somewhere, and I'm getting the same stories that he's getting. But you know darn well, when there's 500 trucks sitting in Des Moines, Iowa, and there's 20 loads, that rate's going to be nothing. And there's nothing we can do because we have all signed up to live in this live market, except those that are either fortunate enough or have worked it out such a way that they have steady runs with their own customers or even steady runs with certain brokers. And, you know, there's all sorts of things, and we've talked about it before. There are things that we can do to protect ourselves. You know, Christopher was complaining about his, you know, dollar a mile out of Jersey, but Christopher never told us what he got to go into Jersey. Now, if he got a dollar a mile to go into Jersey, that wasn't a very good run. If he got $3 a mile to go to Jersey, I don't really feel that bad for him. And, you know, when we're telling people, well, don't go to Jersey and don't go to New York because the backhauls are lousy, go there all you want, but go there for big money. You know, maybe put on what I call a big fatty, a load full of LTL, and run into New York from Atlanta for $4 or $5 or $6 a mile. It can be done. If you're patient, you work hard. You know, there's all sorts of brokers that are looking to move those, you know, 5 and 10,000 pound loads throughout the United States because most of the big guys, the large LTL carriers, they don't want those 10,000 pound loads. They really don't want the 5,000 pound loads because they can't really maximize their equipment. They want those 200 pound skids. That's where they make their money. So I think that the future for a lot of us, especially going into those markets where the backhauls are so horrible, is just charge enough. You know what? If you're getting $5 a mile to go into New Jersey or New York with a load of, you know, let's say six deliveries, it may take you an extra day or two. Big deal. And big deal if you have to come back for a buck a mile. You're still way ahead of the game. Well, like we always talk about, do the hard work. Do the work nobody else wants to do. Nobody wants to go to New York or New Jersey. But that's where the money is, on the one way going in there.
Right, right. And that's, that. You know, that, like you said, you got to find a way to crack that nut. And if you can perfect the way to crack the nut, then there's money to be made there. There's definitely money to be made there.
You know, if you have air freight coming out of JFK, there's all sorts of it. You know, align yourself with, if you're running in there all the time, spend some time and call some air freight companies. Little secret, very few air freight shipments that go within 500 to 1,000 miles on this continent ever see an airplane. They travel on an airline bill of lading, but they will never go on a plane because the plane, the truck will beat the plane almost any time.
That's amazing.
Because of the handling.
Good stuff. And I tell you the other thing, Chuck, is that right now, what are you seeing? What are some of the different trends that you are seeing? Or do you think that we may be, you know, earlier in the year, I was a little more pessimistic. I was a little more bullish on the outlook of what we're coming down the pike. And I'm starting to see some things that look like we might be moving, inching slowly in the right direction. Kind of give us your feel, what you think, what's your pulse of the market right now?
I think certain areas, I think your manufacturing belts in the United States are on fire. I think they're doing phenomenal. Having just toured your country for the last 10 days, or for 10 days, I can tell you the state of Ohio is on fire. You know, Kentucky seems to be doing well, Tennessee, where there's manufacturing. On Saturday night, my wife and I were coming through Ohio, and we stopped around first of all, we stopped in Dayton. She needed to go to an outlet store to buy something that we couldn't get up in Canada in the same color or something. You know, women are like that. And we went to one of those outlet stores, and I got to tell you, the place was just packed. And this was late in the day. It was about 5:30. And then we started heading north, and we stopped somewhere around Lima for dinner. And this is a telltale sign of how good things are. We could not get into any restaurant. You know, at the side of the highway, they have Olive Garden, and they've got, you know, restaurants like that. Red Lobster.
Restaurant,
you know, and we were starving.
Restaurant. Yeah, I call them the restaurant rolls.
That's right. And
they kind of line up all the restaurants.
That's right. And the only one of them was 20 minutes, and I didn't want to wait 20 minutes, and it was a dirty-looking steakhouse. I didn't feel like steak anyways. And then there was a Tex-Mex place. It was 45 minutes. The the Olive Garden was 45 minutes. They were all that long, and we just got in the car and kept driving, and we ended up in Monroe, Michigan. Now, there you had the total opposite. Monroe, Michigan, being in Michigan, being what it is, the place was like, you know, it looked like a bomb had hit it. There was nothing going on the streets. We went to a wonderful little Mexican restaurant, but that was the only restaurant open in the whole town, and that's just right at the south end of Michigan before you hit Ohio. But it just shows you the difference. Because Michigan is still having a real tough time, where Ohio's on fire, and so are a lot of those rust states. And those rust states, they'll probably carry the torch. It'd be pretty hard for anything to happen really badly until after November. They'll hold this thing any way they can because it doesn't look good for anyone. If there was a recession right now. Now, Canada's not in the same boat. We have, as I've mentioned before, our outbound out of this country is non-existent. Canada's turned into Denver or Boston as far as backhauls. You know, that gentleman, Christopher, was talking about, you know, a dollar a mile freight, which in Canadian money is about $1.35, standard out of here a lot of days. You know, that's that $1.35 per mile. That's a standard outbound rate if you could get it. You can get the load. And that's because we dismantled our manufacturing base, as, you know, back in 2008 when our dollar became equal to yours. Before that, we had a very strong manufacturing base, especially in Ontario. Now, Quebec, which is about 350 miles to the east of me, they're doing better because they have cheap hydroelectricity. So that's really helped them, and their manufacturing base seems to be doing a little bit better because of that. And the rest of the country, they don't manufacture a whole lot. You know, our prairie provinces, they're they're hurting. And British Columbia, all I can tell you about that place is the nice place to visit. You wouldn't want to buy a house there because a tiny little bungalow will set you back about $3 or $4 million in Vancouver. So nobody can afford to live there unless you have money from another country. So, you know, that's what we're seeing in Canada.
Well, Chuck, we blew through that hour. If you want to, I don't think we have any more questions. No, nobody has hands up right now. I got a question, but I'm kind of intrigued to maybe if I should save it for the next time you come on, or should I go ahead and give it to you now? I got a
couple.
Let's
do it because we never know what's going to happen next time. Maybe a bigger thing we got to deal with.
All right. Well, okay. First question is, what is your? Do you think it would for to get involved with the? Some of the smaller guys, would it be beneficial for some of the smaller guys to maybe look into getting involved with Intermodal as far as getting in with the UIIA? Is that what do you think about that strategy from a smaller guy's perspective?
I think that working if you have to pick exactly what you're going to do. Rail is efficient, and there's some rail programs in the States. I heard of one that was fascinating where they were taking rail, putting trailers on the rail from one end of Missouri to the other. Now, the problem with rail, the way it's going, it's changed, where we used to do all intermodal. And you could, there's a wonderful rail service we have here up in Canada, for example, that goes from Quebec to Ontario. So it goes from Montreal to the Toronto area, which is about 350 miles. And you put your trailer on the train, and, 6 hours later, 7 hours later, you can pick it up, and it's cheaper than running your truck. The challenge with intermodal in the future is they're getting rid of all of those flat cars they used to haul the trailers, and they're going to double-deck containers. Now, the problem with double-deck containers, they take an awful lot longer to unload than a 53-foot trailer. So you've got twice the amount of time for unloading. So it really depends where you're going. If a small guy can get into the rail game, let's say between St. Louis and L.A. and be able to do the drayage on the other side. If two small guys do that, there's a good future in that. But they have to have the time available. And remember something, you've got all sorts of operators within the United States that are doing it already. That are, you've got the Hunts, the Schneiders, the Swifts, all those big guys, they've been doing that for the last 20 years. So you've
right.
got
to
pick
they are starting to get in, and they're starting to squeeze out a lot of the smaller guys. But the reason I brought that question up is that it's wacky season down here in our country. It's political. It's election time. So no matter what side of the aisle that you fall on, I kind of refer to it as wacky season because, I'm an independent. I don't necessarily fall on one end of the spectrum or the other. But it's been really, it's been almost like comedy hour down here looking at some of these debates. And listening to some of the stump speeches and everything. But one of the big things, of course, is, everybody's talking about, getting trucks off of the road, and building high speed rail systems, and I'm thinking that if there seems to be a wave really trying to go move things into that direction, and a lot of the ports are dredging and making bigger so bigger cargo ships can come in. And different things of that nature. And I'm just trying to think from a business analytical standpoint. Maybe there might be something that, where they say there's smoke, there's fire. it might be something there. And, you know, I just figured, you know, while we were here amongst our small little group of friends here, it might be worthy of a discussion.
I totally agree with you. It's definitely the future. It's cleaner. It works better. You know, we've gotten into this thing in the last 35 years, and I was one of the guys that got into it right away with Just In Time. And, you know, when I got into selling freight almost 40 years ago when I first started Traffics, and I used to go and see a potential customer, and I would see in those days up here, there'd be a Maislin trailer or St. Johnsbury, and I would say to a customer, well, where did that load come from? And the guy would say, New York. And I'd say, well, how long did it take to get here? He'd go, 3-4 days. And I would say to him, well, I could do that in 12 hours for a quarter of the price. And they used to laugh at me. And that's how I built my business. And in those days, people expected to have to wait 3 or 4 days for a shipment that was going 500 miles. Today, we're all spoiled. All the shippers and receivers are spoiled. And they're expecting, just like the automotive guys, they're expecting a shipment from that loads in St. Louis that's 850 miles from Toronto. If it loads in the morning, it needs to be there, you know, the next day around noon. They time everything. They time those plants. And the whole world has gone crazy. And especially with money being as cheap as it is, and interest rates aren't about to go up, I think that just-in-time is the stupidest thing I ever heard of in my life, and that people need to carry inventory, because if they did carry some inventory, they can lower their transportation costs. They don't need it as quickly.
Right.
And I remember getting right. into this rip-roaring argument with my son Doc when he was in university out in our driveway one night about 3 in the morning on our way home from work. And, you know, he was such a believer of just-in-time freight because of some idiot professor he had at Laurier University. And I said, no, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, just-in-time freight costs too much. It costs more than it's worth. And I still believe that. So if we go back to a little bit, I'm not saying we should go back to the way it was totally 40 years ago, but if we go back a little bit and companies start holding inventory, a little bit of it, then we can go and get some trucks off the road, which we're going to have to do. Because, you know what, doesn't make any sense. You've got this, you know, a new truck up here in Canada, in Canadian funds, a new sleeper cab, is somewhere between $160,000 and $200,000 for one truck. I don't know how much they are down there. It doesn't make any sense because you can't make any money using that asset for 11 hours a day. So trains are really the only way, or we go back to the hub and spoke where Chuck runs that truck, his truck for 12 hours and he grabs a hotel room, and then Rico gets in that truck and he runs it for 11 hours and it's somebody else. And that's how it's going to have to work because of these new laws. So really the laws are dictating that rail is going to have to prevail in future, especially when all of the states eventually are going to get on to this CARB thing like California. Right now we're okay. It's just California. But, you know, I think tonight as we're having this conversation, you know, a great American and a great Canadian here, down in Washington, D.C., a great American and great Canadian, your president and our prime minister are having a dinner. And during that dinner, they're talking about climate change. And these are two young guys that probably don't necessarily love the trucking industry because we belch out a lot of dirty fumes.
All right.
And you will see, you know, rail makes sense for that. And the other thing that makes sense that nobody's even is even mentioning what you have in your country, you've got wonderful waterways that aren't being used.
Right.
Now, we have them here along the shores of the Great Lakes, but we certainly don't have the volume. But, it, you know, people have proven that it works. It just, it's clumsy, but it could work. But it won't work as long as people are willing to run trucks for $1 a mile. But when you buy that $170,000 or $190,000 tractor, you're not going to be able to run it for $1 a mile, even if the thing gets 20 miles per gallon.
Exactly.
So I think you're right on with the rail, and I think that everybody out there listening can, if he or she wants to, can be a participant in that new world of transportation through, you know, somebody has got to go to those rail yards with a container and pick up those 53-foot containers from the rail yard and deliver them to the customer and either drop them there or deliver the load and bring it back or reload it. So I think our worlds are going to change because there'll be hardly any reason for Rico to run from Atlanta all the way up to Maryland because you would use a train. But there would be a good opportunity for Rico to take his truck and take a load from Atlanta to Macon. That would make sense.
Right.
And that's how I think we're
right.
going to see things change.
Yeah, I think that, and the other question that I have for you is, and this has kind of been a hot day. We've kind of touched on it before and everything, but, and I'm hearing a lot more people still talking about it still, but the ELDs and shippers being shippers and receivers getting trucks loaded and unloaded in a timely fashion. How is that ELD going to affect being able to actually get detention? Where do you fall on that argument?
It's not going to, you know, as long as our industry has people that'll give it away for free, we're never going to be able to charge for it. That's the problem. And, you know, and again, I hate to get, we keep going back to Chris in New York or New Jersey. You have some poor driver that's stranded in Jersey, and he gets into a door, and they take 3.5 hours to load him. And he gets it signed on the bill lady, or else what happens is he says, hey, you know, I signed in here. It's 12 o'clock. You know, it's 3:30 now. I'm just getting loaded. And, you know, guy would say, get out of here if you don't like it. What are you going to do? And until the law has some teeth in your country, this is ridiculous. There was a Peter Fazio from Oregon. He's the only one that has stood up to the plate, and I haven't heard or read much about him lately, but when this first came out, he said,
right.
Well, I'm all in favor of it, but you need to make the shippers and receivers responsible. And then some of the
and
big
see,
guys.
I don't know. And that's where I think that, you know, you get as much political influence as you can afford, and I think that their pockets are a lot deeper and they are a lot more organized than the trucking industry. Because like we were talking about before, we're so fragmented, and you know, normally if you get five truckers in a room, you can't agree, you know, they're going to disagree on what color the sky is for the day, you know.
That's right. it's true, Rico. You're right on the money. And, you know, the big guys, I think, are better at it, and that's why they're big, you know, and they always have been. They will work as a consortium. They will work together. And I think a lot of us small guys don't have that mentality because it's more of every man for himself. You know, we see it all the time where, you know, you deal with a customer and you fire the customer because they're so bad because they don't pay their bills fast enough or they deduct stuff they shouldn't be deducting. And so you stop giving them service and there's 20 idiots in there doing the same thing. And when those 20
idiots... Well,
I think
it's time. I'm going to reach out to you a little bit, maybe tomorrow or later on in the week. I think it may be high time that we actually start putting some meat on the bone for that dream that we've had about talking about trying to put together this, you know, trying to put together some type of a of a consortium of our own, as far as, you know, because I think that for the smaller guys that understand what we're dealing with, I think that, you know, you get enough like-minded people together, I think that we can create some momentum in the positive direction to actually affect some change in the industry. We just have to have enough numbers to be able to do it.
Rico, I got to tell you something. It's not just the change that we would affect. It's the profitability. Because all of a sudden, you know, instead of having one truck or five trucks, you are part of a fleet of 2,000 or 3,000, and you're treated differently, and you get your permit. It's so much cheaper to permit 2,000 trucks per truck than it is to permit one truck. You know, you have a department that does that. It's economy of scale, and that's what the
right.
The small independent trucker needs today because of who we're competing with. You know, we've got some tough, tough competition out there in the big guys that are good. They do a good job. You know, and some of these guys are monsters. They've got very large organizations, and they're brilliant, and they're good at what they do. You know, I remember having a meeting many years ago with the guys from Schneider's. They came to see a terminal that I had that I owned in Toronto, and they were going to rent part of it. And they were telling me some of the things they were doing, and this goes back 25 years ago. They were making deals with International to build trucks during certain times of the year when International had room on their production line, their dead months. They would buy the space. They were buying.
Wow. That's smart.
These guys were brilliant. Don Schneider, may he rest in peace, he was a bloody genius. They wouldn't buy engines through International. They just went to Cummins themselves. And they said, you know what? We need 1,000 engines. They sold it to them.
Wow.
How many filters do you buy, Rico? Well, you buy 3 filters altogether?
Right.
4 filters, depending on what you have. Schneider's was buying truckloads of them. Guess what they paid for a filter? You know, everybody out there listening was paying $2.02 for a gallon of U.S. fuel. I bet you those big guys are paying $1.60 or $1.70.
Right.
That's how they can do it. And we're never going to compete with that unless we banded together.
And the people that are members of NASTIC that are still, you know, listening in, you understand this concept, because just like, you know, that's the way that NASTIC was able to do with their fuel purchasing program, where we are able, if you are members of NASTIC, to get this, you know, the same discount, if not better than some of the big fleets, is they were able to pull the resources of the largest segment of the trucking population, which is the mom and pop, you know, us small guys, the guys with less than 5 trucks, we make up the bulk of the industry. But we're just so disorganized and disunited that we don't have the buying power or the purchasing power as some of the bigger outfits. But if we can figure out a way to harness that power and utilize that capacity, boy, I tell you what, some big change could happen overnight.
You're right, Rico. You know, we don't all have to drive, beige color or orange Freightliners, but we could all run on the same tires and have a tire program. And you know, it just goes on and on and on of what you could do.
Exactly. Well, Chuck, we're getting ready. It's getting into that 1 hour and 30 minutes. I don't want to keep you too much from your family and everything. Like, man, that Rico guy, he gets on. He don't know how to let you loose. So, Chuck, wrapping up, is there anything you want to leave us with? You want to give us how can people reach you, contact you if they got any questions?
By all means, if you need freight to move? Yep. Freight, it doesn't. We have all sorts of different freight all day, every day. We run a lot of freight out of interstate freight, reefer freight, out of the produce belts, California, Arizona, Texas, depending on the season, that goes all over the U.S. Through our brokerage department. We do have some flatbed and some dry freight that comes up every day. No steady lanes. It's all just whatever customers need. And if you need us, give me a call. We'll start it there. I'm kind of hands-on. My extension is 203, and the phone number is 800-388-4352. Our website is www.traffix.com. That's T-R-A-F-F-I-X. And my email address is real easy. It's chuck@traffix.com. If you call me or email me, I will call you back, and I'll give you some answers if you need them. Thank you.
Sound like a plan, Chuck. We appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule once again to come on and join us and drop some jewels with us here on the Rates and Lanes podcast. And ladies and gentlemen, I am Rico Muhammad. We're getting ready to sign off here from Atlanta, Georgia, wanting you guys all out there be safe and be profitable. Definitely, like Kevin Rutherford says, master the journey. But we also want to, before we get out of here, we want to make sure that we give props out to those who help us make this show possible. My wife and daughter back at home, shout out to them for doing the call screening. And also, we want to give big shout outs to Kevin and Lisa Rutherford, who helped us make this podcast possible. And we'd be remiss in our duties if we didn't acknowledge the entire Less Truck team. There's a whole team in the background that kind of helps put this thing together. So we definitely want to give kudos and shouts out to the entire Less Truck team. Thank you, you guys. Same time, same place next week. I think we will have Mr. Transportation Attorney Henry Seaton himself on board with us next week. So you guys, if you got legal questions, now will be a great time to start jotting those down and writing them and having them for Mr. Seaton when he joins us next week. Be safe out there, everybody. Thanks again, Chuck.
Thank you, Richard. You have a great evening. Be safe, everybody. Bye now.
Hey, you too. Bye.